Episode number 401 with Grammy-nominated DJ Steve Aoki.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
The legendary Steve Aoki in the house today. I am super pumped about this. I got a chance to connect with Steve actually in his studio in downtown LA. So me and Tiff took the video cameras, the mics. We drove down to Los Angeles downtown and connected with this incredible human, Steve Aoki. For those that don't know who he is a label owner, Grammy-nominated DJ, producer, fashion executive, philanthropist. He is a man with many talents and interests and one who makes an impact through all of his endeavors. He has always made it a point to take a proactive stance when it comes to social and humanitarian issues. He is the founder of Dim Mock Records. He's also collaborated with many huge artists, including Tiesto, Linkin Park, Iggy Azalea, will.i.am, Snoop Dogg, and many, many more. And we get in here in this episode, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I posted a photo of us on Instagram. If you're not following me, at Lewis Howes on Instagram and at Steve Aoki, make sure to check us both out. But I posted a photo a few weeks ago when we did this interview. And wow, the response was massive. One of the biggest responses of a pre-photo interview that I've posted of so many people interested about this. Make sure to share this with your friends right now. If you're listening, tweet this out, lewishowes.com/401. Or if you're on the podcast app, just click the share button, post it on Twitter, post it on Facebook, tag me and Steve on Instagram, because this is going to inspire and impact many, many people. If you haven't seen the new documentary of Steve Aoki on Netflix, make sure to check it out. I was fascinated with Steve after I watched this documentary, and I dived in even deeper. And we cover things that he doesn't talk about on that documentary that, for me, was kind of shocking and inspiring that he actually went that far in this interview. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. Again, make sure to share this out. We want to make sure we get this to as many people as possible. Steve was generous to give a lot of his time to share his wisdom, insights, how he's gone over the last decade to build himself up from, you know, promoting these little gigs in his apartment with 10 to 20 people to building a movement, millions of followers and fans around the world, one of the biggest DJs in the world. And he talks about all the challenges and struggles from starting out with nothing to building it to where he is today. We talk about why so many people in the music world are unable to complete projects and how he's learned to get things done and to ship them. Also, how Steve shifts a crowd that isn't present when he's performing. So if you're a speaker or you're a performer or an athlete or anyone that has a performance, an actor, and the audience is not present, he talks about the different things you can do in a moment, in an instant, to shift the entire energy in a room so they all zoom back into you and be completely engaged and present in your performance. We also talk about why Steve hasn't watched his documentary since it first came out, which I thought was kind of interesting. I actually watched Tony Robbins' documentary with him that was on Netflix the night before it came out. And I know he watched it many times before its release. So I was interested to hear why he didn't. Also, Steve's way of setting up his team to support him. I got to meet a number of his team members, and he said that there's no way he could have got to where he is without his team. This and so much more in today's episode, guys. I hope you enjoy this one. Again, make sure to share this with your friends. This is going to be a big one. I know it's going to strike a chord with so many people out there. So without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only, Steve Aoki.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new Day All-Purpose Cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria on hard, non-porous surfaces around your home with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited about our guest today, the legend Steve Aoki. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're in your studio here in Los Angeles and a very inspirational space with lots of great people here. And this is where a lot of it goes down in this studio, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Bringing all the artists, the singers, and coming here. And
absolutely. I mean, it's evolved over time. Like, yeah. We took over this floor, this entire floor of this building in downtown LA 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago. And before then, I was working in my house.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, generally speaking, I just, you know, you can tune a room anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to, like, for me, it's more about creative space. If I want to end up mixing or if I really need the acoustics tuned in to the point where it's really important, then I'll go to an actual studio.
Sure.
And rent a studio. But if I want to be creative, I want to be in a comfortable space.
Yeah.
So no matter where I am, I'm going to build a room. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so we took over this floor and what you don't see, which you saw, which is they're like, you know, 3/4 of this floor is the Dimmock headquarters.
Yeah.
And then, we built a wall before when we took over this floor, there was no walls.
Right.
So I needed to have some privacy.
Sure.
So essentially this is like my office, you know, this is where I work. And then these guys work at their desks and, you know, push other artists, and I'm pushing my music out of here. Actually, I lend this studio to a lot of artists as well.
Really?
From Dimmock.
That's cool.
You know, when I'm not around, I'm like, they can use, as long as they don't, you know, destroy my speakers.
Right. Sure. I was really inspired to learn more about you. I started hearing about you about 1.5, 2 years ago on social media. And then the more I heard about people posting about you and people that I have connected with, a guy sent me a message today, Johnny Cupcakes, who was like, you know, Steve was a DJ for an opening party of mine like 11 years ago before anyone knew who he was.
I remember
Johnny Cupcakes somewhere.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
More and more people have been telling me about you. And then I watched the documentary recently and it was like blown away on how inspiring you are and all the things that you've overcome.
Thank you.
So it's amazing to hear more about your story. And I'm really glad you put the documentary out there. I recommend everyone go watch it on Netflix. I'm curious about, I mean, because I didn't know the family dynamics until the documentary. And I think it's fascinating about your father and everything that's happened. And I'm curious, what do you think makes you so driven to be at the top of everything that you're doing right now?
That changes over time. You know, like I guess the best way for me to sum it up is I'm a project oriented person. And so whenever I attack something, I attack it, you know, singularly, but also with multiple teams. So I can't do all this I'm doing alone, you know.
Right.
But I need to focus on one project at a time and see a beginning and an end. I think for the most part, for a long time, I would do certain projects, but I would never finish them. I think that's that case for a lot of people. It's like, you have this drive to start something and then you don't know how to end it. You don't know how to execute and you're afraid of the product. You're afraid how you're going to be perceived. And it's about overcoming that fear too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's hard. I actually like to instill this execution part of starting and ending a project, with my team.
Mm.
So, or with people that I love or that's around me. I remember like just recently, my little niece, she just turned 16 October 12th, is that today?
I think so. Today's 11th or 12th, I think.
Well, happy birthday, Natalie. Anyway, so like 3 weeks ago, My uncle.
It's the 11th.
Okay. So tomorrow will be your birthday. So 3 weeks ago, my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, they just moved the whole family. I just bought my mom a house next to me. So that's been really great for me. In Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
And, I just want to be closer to my family because I'm always traveling.
Yeah.
And she's willing to move. So I was just so happy. I was like, we found this house. It's right next door.
Amazing.
And my brother-in-law moved in with my niece and my sister's moving there. So I'm just like much closer to my family. Makes me happy. And, my brother-in-law, he's a music guy. Mm-hmm. So he's always inspired when he comes in my studio and sees me working or like, you know, my studio is epic beyond epic. The one in Vegas. There's pictures online and stuff.
Sure.
If you hashtag Neon Future Cave, you can see some pictures.
I think you posted on Instagram of you like jumping into a foam pit and everything like that.
Oh, that's not my studio. That's my foam pit room.
It's crazy.
So anyways, he's always like, I can't finish a song. I've never finished a song.
Your brother-in-law.
Yeah. And he's been working on music longer than me. Mm. He has a full little studio set up in the house. I get so excited. He has his MIDI keyboard out. He has some other synths out. His guitar, and he works on Pro Tools. And I'm like, let me hear some stuff. You know, he's like, I actually never finished a song. Wow. So I made a bet with him. This is part of something that I've been doing with my team called Aoki Bootcamp. And the Aoki Bootcamp is all about, meeting your goals. And it's disciplinary. Mm. So if you meet your goal, whatever it might be, you actually have to pay money towards the charitable fund, and the charitable fund disperses it to you know, different things that are in need. So in this case, I set a goal on him. I said, you know, they started a group. Forgot the name of the group. Him and his daughter started a group, and they work on music together, but they've never actually finished a song. So I said, by October 12th, you have 3 weeks.
Wow.
I want you to make a bet with me that you're going to finish your very first song, you know, and he actually did. So it took time. I would hammer and hammer and hammer and hammer. Right. And he's like, I just can't, I'm just not in the space. You know, like what people will say, what I've said, I'm not in the space to do it. I'm sick. I'm tired. Like you make up these excuses so you don't actually do it. And I'm like, I give him some pointers, some hints to be able to truck through those boundaries, those like huge hurdles that you can't ever get through. You always stop there. Everyone always stops at the same place.
Yeah.
And obviously when you get older, it's harder to jump the hurdle because you're more stubborn. You're like, I don't need to. I've already got my shit sorted.
Right,
So I kept on hammering. I'm like, where are you stuck on? What are the issues? Like, okay, so here's some pointers to get through that, whatever that might have been, you know? And I would just keep hammering him, and he started hating me. Kind of. I just saw in his face, like, I can't believe I did this. But in this case, the penalty wasn't money, because I don't want to it's not like I want to take money away from him to go to charity. But the penalty was 3 months of working out every day.
He doesn't work out.
Well, I mean, it's a hardcore working out. It's like you have to do this regimen of working out, and if you miss it, you have to add on a week.
Wow!
So you can essentially be working out for the rest of your life if you don't work out three months straight.
Right, right.
And I'm very strict with these things. Like I'm very strict. Like I have to. I've already donated close to $40,000 to the charitable fund from lost bets.
Wow.
So I'm very, very strict with myself, and I try to keep that, you know, with my team. Mm-hmm. And that's one way to like get through these hurdles is holding yourself and your team accountable. First of all, having a team community mm-hmm. that believes in the same idea.
Right.
A good way to start is WhatsApp groups. You know, we have WhatsApp group and on the workouts, you know, besides this thing I did with my brother-in-law, everyone has to show their workouts every day of what we say we're going to do. And if we don't do it by midnight, we actually have to pay to the charitable fund.
We do something similar with our team too. Every week we give each other a challenge of like what we're going to commit to that week in terms of physical fitness.
Yeah.
And we have like a push-up challenge, like anytime push-ups.
Yeah, we do.
Reach it, you know, it's like 30 anytime push-ups.
125 a day.
Wow.
By midnight. And then you got the oh shit 1 hour rule from 12 to 1, where if whatever you have left over, you have four times the missed allotment.
Mm.
And then otherwise you have to pay, you have to donate immediately.
That's good. Like, I like that.
Immediately.
What do you think it is? I mean, you said for a long time you weren't able to complete things or you have a lot of unfinished projects in the past. What do you think it was a switch for you in terms of being able to start, execute, and finish things? And why are so many people in the music world that you're aware of who are unable to complete things? What is it that holds them back?
I think one thing I learned, especially when I was in high school, and I've said this before many times, is the hardcore music scene that I got introduced to, that became my life, that became my lifestyle. Every decision that I made was all based on the fundamentals of this hardcore scene.
Mm-hmm.
Even the food I ate, I became vegetarian because that's what they did. And they were talking about animal rights and I got into that.
Right.
And it was all really based on passion and community. You know, it's like you have to be really into what you're saying and doing and be educated on what you're saying and doing and learn some instruments and play the music, you know, and play the music of that culture. Essentially, you're an ambassador of the culture. And the way you get respect in that culture is by finishing your projects, whether it's a song, whether it's playing a show, whether it's putting on a show for other bands, so that scene can prosper and there's an ecosystem.
Yeah.
So it's all about making the ecosystem of that community healthy. And the more you do that, the more that you're able to make it healthy, the more respect you get. So it's not about, oh, I just walked in with like the shoes that no one else has or the bike that everybody wants. The more of that element that you bring to the table, the less cool you are. You're cooler if you actually go, I'm vegetarian. I stopped wearing leather shoes. Oh shit. You made a stance. You made right. something that's like a sacrifice. Or I'm putting on a show and all these bands are coming in. Wow. You put on the show. That's awesome. I started a band and I'm playing and I'm representing the sound. Or I made a zine. I interviewed four bands and I went to Kinko's and I made the zine. I'm passing them out to all the different people. It's almost like a religion in a way where you're spreading that goodwill. And it's not about a financial reward as well. It's like there is no financial reward in what I'm talking about here. It's all about believing in a culture and being rewarded by spreading that culture and building that healthy ecosystem of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in essence, that culture doesn't have to be music. That culture could be in a book club or in a chess club or in something that's like drives you. Because, another thing is as well as I talked to some people, they're like, I don't know what my passions are. And I talked to Tom Bilyeu from Inside Quest about like, how do you find your passion? Like what gets you there? You know, if you don't know what it is, and you just have to keep trying stuff and see what pulls you, what's pulling you to a certain place. And then meeting up with those people, that community, and finding out ways, because we all are smart. We all have ways and we all have different ways of thinking about how to get more people involved in what we do.
Right.
You know, so, the idea of being a pusher is a bad thing, but in this case, it's a good thing, you know? So whenever I could push positive lifestyle and a positive, and health and well-being, I feel good about myself.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas when you actually give gifts. It feels much better than to receive.
Sure.
I prefer not to get any presents. I'd rather just give presents. You get more out of it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Like giving is actually the most selfish thing you can do. It's just
because
you feel so good. I'm curious. You talked about sacrifice for a moment. What's the biggest sacrifice you've had to make to get to where you're at?
Well, it's weird because when I think about the times when things weren't happening and I didn't really look at it as sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess in retrospect, it was a sacrifice because you are sacrificing time and you're not, let's say you're not getting paid.
Yeah.
But it's not a sacrifice to you. You know,
it's an investment.
Yeah, it's an investment, but you don't even think of it as an investment either. You think about it. It's just different. You know, like this, like when I'm going back to the hardcore community, it's like, when we put on shows in our living room, we never took a dime. We spent all this time getting people to know about what we did. And once we got the ball rolling, we were on a roll bringing all these artists in. We never took a dime from any shows. We always had people stay over and I guess you could call it a sacrifice, but it really wasn't. It was, it was a real love for what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Was that about 10 years ago or when?
No, was that? That was like 15 years ago.
15 years ago. You were throwing these weekly parties in your apartment with a few other guys, right, that you lived with?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, we had like about over 400 bands play. But it was some bands that became, you know, bands that everyone knows, like Jimmy Eat World or, you know, like a lot of bands, like a lot of hardcore bands, you know. A lot of the bands that were willing to play in a living room.
How many people could you cram in there?
40 people.
40 people.
Yeah, I mean, but it felt like a lot more, you know.
Right,
the energy was pretty wild.
Electric, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, so, like, for me as well, you know, I'm DJing, obviously, to a much larger audience, but I find a value in playing in front of five people. I played in front of five people many times.
Yeah.
As a band.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, because, like, sometimes we would do tour, and we would play in houses, basements, a warehouse that was abandoned. You know, with the generator.
What was the biggest thing you learned about yourself playing in front of those 5, 10, 20 people rooms for years, I'm assuming, before anything ever picked up? What's the biggest lesson you learned about going through that process and that journey?
It's connection. It's like having a real connection with people and looking at them in the eye and actually, like, you know, communicating. I mean, we'd actually, after the shows, we'd hang out with them. Like those five people that came to the show, I'd want to know them. I'd be like, you came, you spent money, you drove all the way to my show. There's only four of you, five of you here, 10 of you here. Let's hang out. Let's do something. Let's like, yeah. I want to know about you and like what your scene's about. And then building a network and actually like treating them as peers, not as fans so much as peers, because I am a fan as well as them. I was those people when I was a teenager, and I'm still those people at other shows. I'm like in the crowd, and if I really am attracted to a message or a sound, I'm always a fan. That's another thing I've learned, is that you can't forget about the fact that the reason why I do it is because I am a fan, and we're all at the same level. That 15-year-old kid that's like up front screaming or like bawling their eyes out or like that energy, I'm like looking at him like, I'm you. I was you. I still am you.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so happy that they don't give a fuck about anybody else and what they're thinking. Cause I was that kid in the front, like screaming, wanting to sing along and be connected to the bands. And when the bands and artists connected with me, it changed my life, you know? Mm. So I always wanted to be that. And then remember like, hey, we are emotional beings and we're here to express this connection. That's why, like, when people are like high on drugs and like completely aloof at my shows, I just feel like what a waste for them and what a waste for myself, bringing them as production, bringing this time, and, you know,
they can't experience it fully.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I'm just like, they forget why they're even there. You know, it's like the people that are completely like, you know, fixed on the show, they get the full experience. They get something that they can leave with that, you know, hopefully can inspire them the way it's inspired me.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am, or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote-unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple-checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you were growing up, did you think you would be in this position? Did you visualize yourself in front of tens, 20s, 50,000 people?
Absolutely not.
You didn't think about it?
There's no visualization of it's not like The Secret where I'm like, this will happen, I will make it happen. I never even imagined scenario bigger than 10, 20, 30, 40 people.
Than your living room.
Yeah. I think there's nothing wrong with imagining and saying, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be a billionaire. I'm going to be influential in my field. I'm going to, there's nothing wrong with that. And like, I agree whenever I read about different entrepreneurs and they talk about, their tips is to like imagine that, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's also a balance of being pragmatic as being realistic and also not forgetting about what's in front of you. Right. Cause like the thing is that, you could be thinking about this grand scale and forget that the five people that are in front of you are there because they love to be a part of that. And if you're not connected to them, they won't be as connected to you and why they came in the first place. So that's why there's times where I'll play a show and I feel the sense of disconnect because there's a lot of people just kind of aloof or not necessarily on drugs, but they're just not
present.
They're not present. And then I become not present. And then the people that are present, they don't become present. And all of a sudden it's a lose-lose for everyone. So I can't look at these like, let's say you have a tremendous show and you're like, oh, that show was great. All shows aren't going to be great. And the shows that are doing that aren't great, you have to actually get more into the show. And that goes back to the very, very beginning of the question you asked. That's another thing that's important to remember is the beginning. And like those five people, those 10 people, or it could be those five or 10 people in the crowd while everyone, like there's like a, where it's not such a great show. Right. Just focus on the people that care.
Yeah. It's funny. Whenever I do speeches and I feel disconnected or like maybe people are yawning or they're on the phone.
Yeah.
And you're like, you get distracted. Someone's walking in the background.
Yeah, right.
In an auditorium, you can see a lot more of this than just like guys jumping around.
Yeah.
It's very present because it's quiet.
Yeah.
And someone taught me, a great speaker taught me, focus on the one person who's looking at you and just hone in.
Exactly.
And connect with that one human being. If it takes you 2 minutes, 3 minutes, just like look them in the eye and really connect with them, you'll bring everyone to that moment.
Yeah.
And you'll bring the whole room back to be present. So is that something you do too?
That's exactly what I do.
Really?
I mean, the same, like a perfect analogy is I'm talking to you, we're connected, we're talking. Mm-hmm. The conversation will open up into all different avenues. But if instead I'm talking to a wall, you ask me a question, I'm talking to a wall, I'm not going to have the same kind of like choose your own adventure, like where we can go and, go off in every direction.
Yeah.
I'll probably just answer questions in a very mundane, monotone,
right,
rudimentary level, and at the end of the day, whoever sees it is going to get that rudimentary level kind of like, I didn't really learn that much, or that wasn't, like, I'm tuned out,
Right. So when you're feeling disconnected or the show is a little off or whatever, your energy's off, is that what you'll do? When there's 50,000 people, you'll find the one person, two people.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll just give them that full attention?
Or... Yeah. And then, like, it all comes back. Mm. And, like, it's exactly what you say. Even if the rest of the people are just leaving, you just got to remember, you can't be harsh on yourself and just focus on the people that care.
Yeah.
And then you have to constantly think back.
Can't please everyone, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you have to think back well in the very beginning where, hey, man, I was happy playing in front of 10 people.
Yeah.
I got to remember why I'm doing this. I'm not doing this for a paycheck. I'm doing this because I love this moment right here and like making this music and being able to connect people with my music.
What's been the most inspiring or impactful moment of your career for you?
Well,
a show or
it's just so many moments that all add up. It's hard. I mean, my first big moment was playing Coachella, which I've always talked about, 2007, because that opened me up to a stage of people that this weren't in my club, in the clubs I was playing in. Getting a Grammy nomination for my first album. That was, wow. You know, just being recognized by the Grammy committee and you know, the music community, like, you know, going, hey, you know, we think that Steve Aoki's
incredible and legit,
yeah, up in the five best albums. I'm like,
that's pretty good.
Yeah. So I, cause you know, I don't like to, I don't, you know, this is my own thing, but like, I'm like almost like anti-secret in a way.
Sure.
Method where I'm just, I don't want to have this expectation because I don't want to always feel so bad if it doesn't happen, you know, because since I got the Grammy nom, I was like, oh, I want to win a Grammy now. But like, it hasn't come, another nomination hasn't come again. And you just have to be like, it might not ever come and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Who was the most influential person in your life growing up?
Well, I'd say through and through my father, you know, and I really got to tell that story in the documentary.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And, I never really publicly talked about that, you know, that's why it was, that's why, like, partially for me, I just haven't seen the film again, you know, since I watched it.
You haven't seen the film?
No, I've seen it. Of course, I've seen the film, but I watched it in full at the Tribeca Film Festival a long time ago. It was like probably in early August or something.
Huh.
Or July. June? Was it June? Whatever it was. It was in the summertime.
You haven't watched since?
No, I haven't. I just, it's hard for me to watch that. It's one thing to actually talk about process and talk and then get into personal stuff and then like bring yourself back into the moment, especially when you're around people that like feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And then it's another thing to watch yourself talk about it. And then, you know,
how did you feel when you watched it at the festival?
A bit uncomfortable, you know, but I was happy my mom was there.
Yeah.
You know, she was sitting next to me. And at the end of the day, the way I see it is I don't really want to think about this film is about me. I'm really like paving, you know, paying an homage to my father and to my mom and to DJ AM and to certain people that really laid the groundwork for me to do what I did, or do what I'm doing. But I just like, I love that. And if I keep that in perspective, then I feel like this film has weight and it's like, you know, people can watch it. But if like, then again, like, I don't want it to be like, oh yeah, you know, like watch this movie about me, it sounds so lame, you know? And when you see people talk about themselves like that, it's kind of want to make fun of them. You know?
Sure. What's the biggest lesson that you've learned from your father then?
I mean, there's so many lessons, right? But, this is like a, you know, obviously his drive was insane.
Unbelievable.
And it came with a lot of, you know, issues, family issues.
Because he wasn't really there much, right?
Yeah, and he was not a great husband. He wasn't really great. Like, he was a good dad in the sense that he brought his kids together whenever he could. But his, like, he wasn't a liar, you know? He's very honest. You know, like, it's true. His number one was business. Number two was health. Number three is family. You know, that's the way he is. That's not necessarily my code of honor. Mm-hmm. That's not my code of conduct.
What's your code?
There is no one, two, and three. You know, it's all like, family is really important to me. But obviously, I work a lot more than I see my family. Mm-hmm. So it's not so black and white. There's times when I'm with my family, all I want to do is support them. So when I see my mom, you know, I'm trying to build a plan for her so that she remains healthy and happy and lives a long life. a long life of happiness and health. So we always think about what we can do, you know, in the Aoki boot camp way, but not necessarily like making your pay, but like sure. Not necessarily making your
push-ups now.
But like, you know, I just want to take care of her. You know, she took care of me.
Yeah. So your code's more of like an integrated balance approach is what you're saying. You may not spend as much time with family, but the time you're with them really is meaningful and it matters and you're present during that time.
Yeah.
And there's probably ebbs and flows of work to family to health. And
I also think like when I'm not with the people I love, I want to kind of like analyze what they do with their day. Because if they're spending their time watching TV when they could be learning, when they could be doing something that's healthy for them and that's healthy and positive and integrates a sense of well-being and happiness that they don't know about before, that's what I want to push. Mm-hmm. In the sense of what I'm saying about being a pusher. So what I do with my mom is like, I'm like, okay, so tell me your schedule of the day. You don't need to do this like TV stuff. Like, you know, I'm getting her piano lessons. Mm. So then she is like using that part of her brain. Yeah. She loves piano. And, making sure there's a personal trainer coming in to like make sure her all like the blood's flowing in her body, she's moving. I'm getting like green cold pressed juices to her and making sure she's drinking at least two a day.
Yeah.
Making sure she's on her vitamin supplement.
What? Did you start a juice company or you're part owner or?
Yeah, with my brother. Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, like those kinds of things are important. She's like, she started writing a book. I'm helping getting a book editor.
Nice.
So it's like, I think, you know, then it's like I feel like I'm doing the best I can as a son, not just hanging out with her and like giving her a hug and giving her a kiss and having dinner and lunch. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, let's like plan it out so that you're using your time effectively, efficiently, that makes you happy and healthy.
Right.
And that works muscles that you almost forget, because that's what happens as we get older. Mm. We're so good at this, we don't need to do this. You know, when you're young, you can do it all. Right. And you like, you just sponge everything, and you get older, it's hard to sponge those things. So it's about challenging yourself and saying, hey, I didn't learn this language, but I have to make it a goal. And everyone says that. You know, I've said that about learning languages myself. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to learn it next year. Next year, resolution.
Right.
But if you don't have some sort of, like, system set up to force you to learn it, you know, and I talked to some people about this. Like, it's bad. It's such a bad idea, this whole disciplinary thing. It just, like, puts, like, a bad taste in people's mouth. But I get it done this way, and exactly. I enjoy it. At the end of the day, it's as long as I'm doing the work, then I will – you know, whatever it might be, then I'll feel better about myself. Yeah. You know,
what would you say is your vision for your career and your life?
Well, I mean, my core is always music. So it's producing music and playing music. Those are like, that's my core. It's like what I've built my whole life around in one form or fashion, from playing guitar and being in bands and being in the studio and that sense to working right here in this studio or like working on electronic music and playing it. That's like that thread. It will probably exist for a long time because it's just been it's just always there. That passion and drive is always there. But the passion and drive are one and the same. And they always change. And I always follow where that goes. And it leads me into like all kinds of different places that I'm, that leaves me in places of challenge where I'm here to challenge myself. In the case of Johnny Cupcakes, where I met him like 11 years ago, you talked about, I threw myself into the fashion world by this opportunity that was given to me. It was, hey, we want you to DJ at this Magic Trade Show and we can't afford to pay you, but we'll give you a booth. Cause essentially Magic, the trade shows are real estate.
Yeah.
They're a real estate agent. They own this convention hall and they're like, we're going to rent out this. And it's like, you just got to be next to the right real estate. You know?
Right.
So, they're like, just give me a booth anywhere. So they give me like the back corner. Like, hey, we're not going to sell anyways. We'll give it to Aoki.
Sure.
And, I'm like, perfect. I need this as a deadline in the project oriented sense. I have this deadline. I got to come up with a bunch of t-shirts. Good thing is I was screen printing shirts when I was 15 years old.
Really?
In my mom's house.
Wow.
In the closet, like with emulsion and just
right.
and printing on vintage shirts and selling them for $5.
Wow.
this is something I want to get into. And now I have a deadline and now I have a project and now I have a booth to be able to show these shirts. So I was just screening shirts and then, you know, and I had like a few designs that I came up with some of my friends, met with this guy. He's like, hey, I'll represent you. He was a friend. He didn't even have a showroom. Perfect. It's exactly the same model that I started when I was in bands. You know, when I was in bands, I started with people that didn't know how to play instruments. I'm like, let's learn together.
Wow.
Even my manager who manages me now, he wasn't a manager before. He's like, I'm like, you believe in me? Okay, let's just go and hit the road and we'll figure it out. We'll stumble, we'll fall, we'll pick each other up and we'll keep going. And that's been the process for me, even with music production, electronic productions. I met with another friend who he just learned Pro Tools. But he knew it enough where he could train me. And we worked together for 2 years before I started producing on my own.
Wow.
And so it's just like that kind of like attitude of, I just give me a deadline and I'll figure it out. And it might not be great, but I promise you I'll get it done.
Mm.
You know, I just need to have, first of all, I need to have the passion and drive to get there. I have to want to be there. And I just need that deadline.
Yeah.
Give me the deadline. I want it. I love the deadlines.
Yeah.
So,
how did that first trade show go then?
Pretty bad. pretty horrible.
Did you sell any shirts?
I don't know. Maybe like a couple stores picked them up. But,
sure.
But it was a learning. It's just a learning curve. And I, you know, 9 years later, I started a fashion company.
Yeah. I call that.
Which is Demo Collection.
Yeah.
Time.
I call that practice reps.
Yeah.
Where you just like, you're not going to make any money. You're not going to.
You're going to lose money.
You're going to lose money.
Yeah.
But the things you learn, the knowledge is like getting a real life PhD in whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And you're just doing practice rep after practice rep until like the big game comes and you're ready.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, like that, like, you know, in a nutshell, I got into Magic. I was doing every year. I got into doing a DJ for them. They gave me a booth. Great deal because they'll sell me a booth that, or give me a booth that no one wants anyways. Mm-hmm. Sold a couple of t-shirts, like learned the business. 2 years later, I own my own trade show.
Wow.
Alongside Magic and Project and Pool. Pool sold to Avinstar. Avinstar is a company that owns Magic. And I teamed up with the younger brother of the woman that sold Pool. She couldn't do any trade shows, but he learned everything from her. So I teamed up with him and he saw what like my intent, my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And we started this trade show and we owned it 50%.
Wow.
It's called United Trade Show.
Amazing.
And then we gather all, it's basically real estate, right? So you gather all your friends together like, hey, we have a convention hall. We're at the same time as Magic and we're the edgier trade show.
Right.
And we did that for a couple of years and I had a good time. I learned the ropes by throwing myself in the ring, throwing myself in the deep end and learning how to swim before I drown.
Right, right.
And, That was an interesting round, and then like at the same time, I'm trying to pick up this fashion business, which is, you know, it was cool, it was existing, but it wasn't doing any real business.
Mm-hmm.
And I met with partners that just came and failed, and like, you know, they were interested and like weren't interested, and then over like 9 years, finally, you know, I get to I find out like some people that were interested and
yeah.
And we're on three seasons deep in a full on, you know, menswear collection of, you know, all kinds of really great garments and t-shirts and hoodies and pants and shorts and button downs.
Congrats, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Doing well in Japan.
It's paying off. That's great.
Yeah.
When Tillamook ice cream beckons you to the freezer aisle, which irresistibly creamy flavor do you choose? While you're thinking, try not to fuck up the glass. Tillamook ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
I'm curious now, where do you think you'd be right now if your father was there more, as more of an example and was around and spent a lot of time, if family was number one for him,
yeah,
and he wasn't as driven and achieved what he did, where do you think you'd be if you had a different example?
I don't know.
Because you'd still be driven to do what you're doing?
I'm not sure. Maybe I'm not entirely sure. Mm. It's such a tough one. Like I guess you could say that I probably wouldn't be, you know, maybe that's the case. Maybe like that absent father, dynamic and me trying to prove to him was how I was able to get through like the tough period of time. And what if he did invest in me early on? What if I failed? You know, maybe not. Maybe I would have found an artist and I would be able to build it up at the time. Because with, you know, at the period of time before I even was a DJ or an artist, it was all about Dimmock Records and how I can catapult this lifestyle brand into a real record business, like a music business. And we got there. But we might not have got there, you know. I mean, but that has nothing to do with him if we got there. Sure. It had to do with me being connected to a scene that attracted certain bands, and those bands blew up, and we were able to represent those bands.
Right.
So that necessarily didn't have anything to do with him. If he funded those at me at the time for me to actually do something, I'm sure that I would have been able to hire employees and do this, and it would have been a shorter road to success. And I would have made more decisions that could have catapulted the business.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, I got money and I don't know what to do with it. I'm just going to throw it all in there. And then all of a sudden business goes kerplunk and I'm like, okay, I'm out. Maybe that could have happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's what happens if you're inexperienced, you're running a company, you have money, right? You're more likely to throw all the eggs in the basket and kerplunk your business instead of managing it, managing expectations,
right,
being realistic. Because you don't have the budgets and you have to find a way through your relationships to get through instead of having a fund egg from your family.
Right.
You know, so, but then again, there's a lot of trust fund kids that are successful.
Right.
So you just never know. You just never know. So it's interesting. It's like, you know, I think it's, I'm proud of the way I did things. I'm proud of how it all came out to being, but it was years of like, holy shit, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. I'm going to be in debt and no one's like, there's no out for me.
Right.
But you know, at the end of the day, I have to also recognize that I'm not going to be homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to like, if at the end of the day, I might have a debt, but I could probably work, you know, and I could probably go back to working at like, or not go back, but if he was still alive, I could probably work for him somehow.
Right.
You know, he is a successful man. It's not like I'm from the streets. I'm like, oh shit, I'm out. Right. Like, it's not real world scenarios.
Get a job somewhere. Yeah.
It's like my life is not real world scenario, you know, where people don't have a safety net. Of course I had a safety net. So I will never, you know, not recognize that. And that's important too. So maybe the safety net subconsciously, even though I didn't actually get fronted the money, the fact that I had a safety net allowed me to take more risks.
Go all in.
Right. Yeah. Allowed me to go, look, I'm going to go for it. But at the end of the day, in the front of my head, I wasn't thinking about money anyways. I wasn't thinking about being rich. I don't want to have those fancy cars. I don't care. I'm happy to sleep on couches. I don't mind sitting in the middle seat in the back of the plane. Those things didn't matter to me. So at that time, you know, my perspective wasn't about how do I make money for myself. It's more about just having an ecosystem that I can live in so I can do what I do. You know, I mean, when I was graduating college, you know, I was considering to stay in academia where your top end salary is probably 50 grand. Social work, you know, with a women's studies degree and sociology, it's
not much.
Yeah. Like you do it because you love to, right. You know, like that's why, like, I have so much respect for people in academia that are sitting in research labs or writing books, you know, teaching about their specialized subjects because they love what to do, what they do. They're not doing it, to be rich. They're doing it because they want to better the world in their own way.
Sure, sure. What would you say is your biggest fear right now?
Well, I mean, it's maybe staying relevant.
Not staying relevant, you mean?
Yeah, not staying relevant. And just because, like, you know, I've been in this kind of volatile climate of music, you know, rushing as a trend and then disappearing, you know, and, you know, it's almost like you want to be at the top of the trend, but then you don't, because when that trend goes, sometimes you go too, no matter how bad you change your sound or whatever you do. I've always been luckily like kind of in the middle. Like I've been at the top. Like Dimmock is not the coolest label. We're not the most profitable label, but we've survived through so many epochs of labels and trends because we've kind of like, you know, we want to be cool and relevant.
Yes.
Of course I want to be relevant and connect with people, but my music might not, like, even if I try to make a change, my music that inspires me, it might not connect with someone else.
Yeah.
And it might throw people a curve, you know. And I'm doing that for sure this year. I've been working with a lot more hip hop artists. I've even changed my sound a lot more than the typical EDM sound with a hip hop vocalist on there.
Sure.
Like I've like thrown out sometimes on tracks I have no drops. You know, and in the EDM world, drop is what makes you EDM, you know.
Right.
So, and I've also changed my kicks and my snares and like things of technical detail where it doesn't even, like, if you change those sounds, it doesn't even sound like an Aoki sound anymore from like someone that always listens to my music. And I'm willing to do that because I get excited. I'm like, cool, I got to change things up. So that can throw your relevance off, your relevance curve off. And,
so what if you became irrelevant one day? Because you were passionate about what you were doing and executing the things you love, but the world didn't think it was as relevant or cool. How would that make you feel?
I'd have to really take a look deeper into why I'm doing things again. You know, going back into, like, you know, that one person that really cares in the front of the room.
Yeah,
and just know, like, you know, they might change too. Like as you change a topic, you know. Like they might change too, and you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with that, you know. And no, it's not about you really love what you do. You like it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like the balance for me. It's like I got so far to this point where I actually built a global audience.
Yes.
That's following my sound.
Massive audience. Yep.
That I'm really proud of, and I really care so deeply about this work and my work I'm doing. I want to continue to grow it. So, you know, of course, like, if it goes down or, you know, people aren't willing to follow my lead, I'm like, shit, am I doing the right thing?
You
know?
Sure,
like,
sure.
But then, I have to think, like, I have to do what I love to do.
Yeah.
And also I remember having this talk with, another DJ that's just been in the game. He's been like a godfather in a way for me, like a good friend of mine, Armand Van Halden. He's from New York, and he's just like, he's had so many incredible highs and not necessarily lows, but highs and just, you know, going off the radar and highs and going off the radar and highs and going off the radar. And he's like, I've seen it so many times. I know I'm going to go back up on the high. I know I am. So I'm not worried when I'm when I'm off the radar. Not necessarily low, just off the radar.
Right.
And it's his choice to be off the radar. But he's has such like this kind of cycle. It's not even the 1% that could be Rihanna and Drake that's always on the high.
Right.
You're talking about the 0.00000001% that stays on the high the whole time.
Every year.
It stays here. Because they're the ones pushing the culture. Entirely. They're the ones that define what the culture is meant to be. You know, reality is, even if you're the 1% that actually can get to the high, realistically, you will drop and you have to be okay with that and just keep working and keep making more music and remaining true to the people that, you know, that are leading you and like connecting with them. Say, okay, come with me, guys. Let's go. We're going to go. Yeah. We're going to go on this trip. it might not be something you'd expect, but just come with me.
Trust me.
Yeah. Trust me. And some of you are not going to trust me once you hear it.
Right.
It's fine.
Check it out.
It's fine. But we're going to keep trucking. We're going to get to the next adventure. And I hope you guys continue, because it's going to be different, and I'm going to try to keep surprising you.
Yeah, that's cool. What would you say is the thing you're most proud of that a lot of people don't know about you? Maybe that isn't out there in the public or isn't in the documentary, but something that you're really proud of. It could be like a small thing, but
I know how to do the most hygienic sneeze probably that you can do.
How do you do that?
So, like, most people, when they sneeze and they don't want to spread their germs, they usually sneeze in their shirt or
the bring underneath.
Yeah, or like, yeah, like that. I used to do that all the time. Cover your mouth, obviously. You get spit all over your hand, you know, like sometimes like a big fat loogie comes out.
Sure.
And you're like, oh shit.
Naughty.
Like, you know, you're like, oh, God.
So how do we do this?
So last year I had to, I had vocal surgery.
Yes.
So I couldn't speak for a month.
Mm.
And part, like, you know, like before the surgery, I just was quiet. And if I had to cough or sneeze, I would cough and sneeze. After the surgery, if you coughed or sneezed, your vocal cords vibrate at such like a zzz, you know, it's just so bad for your vocal cords. And I'm slicing one side of the vocal cord. So your vocal cords are like a V.
Mm.
So you slice one side and it's just raw and red and you just do not want it to touch because it's healing. And so if you sneeze, you're just destroying them. So I had to learn how to cough or sneeze without making a sound. And I learned this. It doesn't sound or look pleasant when I do it, but I do it kind of like when no one's looking at me.
Sure.
But you have to, you have to keep your mouth wide open. So you have to like,
when you're about to sneeze.
Yeah. I keep my mouth open like this. So my vocal cords open. Right. And then when I'm sneezing, I blow out like I'm blowing out. Like I just smoked a shitload of weed. I'm like, like right before you cough, you're like, holy shit. Like your lungs are like, you're blowing your lungs out
while you're sneezing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you actually, what happens is like, you don't make a sound because it's just a lot of air gushing out. Like what I just did, that sound that I just did is the most sound you make. And when I do that,
no saliva,
there's
no spit.
Vapor.
Huh.
There's no like vapor. So I could sneeze where trillions of bacteria aren't flying or in the air and there's no vapor and it just makes that sound. And if everyone did this hygienic sneeze, I think, you know, like, there wouldn't be as many colds flying around.
I like that. Yeah. That's a good, thing to be proud of.
Yeah.
How do you, we've got a few minutes left. I want to be respectful of your time. I want to ask a few last questions. How do you balance it all? Cause in the documentary, you're like three cities a day. It seems like you're flying around. How do you balance it all? Do you batch travel? Do you, you know, I don't know how you do it. I'm curious.
Well, here we are. We're in LA and, this happens because I have a team. I don't do it on my own. My publicist is right behind you. She handles all this
stuff.
She's
amazing.
She's,
we connected before you got here.
She travels with me on all my publicity runs, and I can't do it without her. If she's not there, I don't know if I can be in the room. And she's great. And so it's like I have teams that like help manage all the time, yeah. Manage all this. Yeah, it's time management and it's project-oriented management. Mm-hmm. You know, like you have to focus on each thing and make sure that you have the right team. So it's like team management and time management.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when I'm creatively working in the studio, there's a lot more that goes in just finishing a song.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more. There's so many different steps that you have to do, and especially when you work with big artists.
Yeah.
You have to work with their management, you got to work with their agents,
yeah.
You got to work with their labels.
So much.
And then you got to work around the schedules, and you got to get all this paperwork signed off, and then after that you got to make these radio edits, you got to make this edit, you got to make this for movies, you got to do this, you know, it's like
It's a lot.
I can't do all that. What I could do is make the music.
Yeah.
You know, and I could work on the creative side, but like I need a whole team around that. Mm-hmm. And then on the fashion side, there's a whole different team.
Teams. Can't do it on your own.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you can't do it on your own, and no, and it's all, it's like also letting go of power and control and being able to share that.
Yeah.
And share that with the right people. That's another thing too. Is I think I also read this before anything is you know, the hiring process is really important.
Yes.
And I trust people more than skill set. Mm. That's another thing too. It's like you trust someone, they'll grow with you.
Like your manager didn't know how to manage.
Both my managers.
But they
both my managers were not managers before me.
Right.
But I almost preferred people. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that didn't really work with my tour managers. Like I actually had to work with a guy that lived on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like a road guy. Cause that's a different kind of lifestyle. Mm. And after a few months, people were like, get me off the road. I can't handle this kind of schedule, especially my schedule. My schedule is like a anomalous schedule.
Your machine
of touring. You have to really be a road dog.
Yeah.
You have to be a road dog that loves to be on the road.
Right. What are the non-negotiables for you every single day that you must do in order for you to have a great day, whether it be health-wise, meditation, you know, working out? What are the things? Talking to your mom.
10 minutes of meditation. I try to do 15, but 10. I have my workout regimen. I do like now we're doing like minimum like 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups. And if we don't do that, do some sort of like CrossFit workout. Mm. Like those are like things on the health side and balance. Trying to eat healthy, obviously, and always getting in some sort of you know, it's like learning a language. You have to do it every day.
Yeah.
With music production and working on music, I have to get a little bit in as much as possible. Sure. I don't do it every day, but, cause I really work like it's different. Like when you're in the studio, I spend more time here than like at a show, I'll play for 90 minutes here. Mm-hmm. When I'm in the studio here, I'll be in here for like 9 to 10 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you have to also learn to give up bad habits and discipline yourself that you got in those bad habits because of routine. So in the same sense, you get in good habits from routine.
Yeah.
So we just try to like balance and, you know, bad habits for me is I used to drink all the time. So I just quit drinking.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't an AA move. It wasn't, I wouldn't say I'm an addict like an Alcoholics Anonymous, person, but, because I'll have like a taste of alcohol every now and again to the cheers celebrate.
Sure.
But for me, I just cutting it out entirely, not getting drunk and being completely conscious of my decisions and everything around me. I like to remember things.
Yeah.
I like to be more engaged.
Sure. That's awesome. This is a question I ask at the end for all my guests. It's called the three truths. So if it's many, many years from now and it's your last day and you've achieved everything you've wanted to achieve, but for whatever reason, everything you've ever created has been erased and people don't have access to what you've created anymore.
Yeah.
And everyone's there by your side. It's a celebration. And they say, we love, here's a piece of paper and a pen. We want you to write down the three things you know to be true about everything you've experienced in life that you would pass on as lessons to us. What would you say, you know, off the cuff, because I didn't prep you for this question, are your three truths?
I didn't get prepped for any of the questions, but but maybe you sent it to my team, but I didn't look. Well, I mean, first of all, is to be happy, or just that term happiness. And how's that defined for your life? Because, like, what makes you happy shouldn't be like, you're a kid, a toy truck, or when you're older, like a car. It's like people around you, you know, like surround yourself with good people that, you know, like whenever you do something good for someone, like you're happy. Yeah. So like what we're talking about before.
Right, right.
So like, always be on the pursuit of happiness.
Okay.
That's one. And two is, have a positive outlook on life.
Mm.
In general, just be a nice person. Have a positive outlook, be a nice person, and be happy.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have those three things, you know, because, like, it's easy to have the glass half empty rule and complain about everything, and there's always a problem, and, you know, for me, it's nothing worse than having that around me. I don't like that. You know, I'd rather be around people who are like, okay, we can always find the good in everything. Mm-hmm. And of course, be realistic so we know what the negatives are so we can learn to stay away from them or learn to overcome them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I live life for this pursuit of happiness and generally just to be a good person to people and you know, the other one, having to have a positive outlook on life.
I love it. Before I ask the final question, how can we support you? How can we support the biggest thing you're up to right now?
I'd say like the one thing that people can do that's timely is November 15th. I mean, this is happening locally. So this is locally in Las Vegas. We're having a fundraiser for my charitable fund.
Okay.
And all the money is going towards either brain research or brain related diseases and organizations that focus on that.
Mm.
So we're doing our fundraising event in November 15th at Brooklyn Bowl.
Okay. And if people can't make it there, how can they support online?
They could donate money, you know, or spread the word or like retweet.
What's
like,
the link? Where's the site?
SteveAokiFund.com.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And you can buy some merch there too. You
get awesome.
Like coffee mugs and t-shirts and stuff.
Cool.
Wear a Save the Brain t-shirt. We made a really cool shirt with like a brain, different colors, and it says Save the Brain.
I love it.
It's like I don't really hear much about brain. I mean, of course, like giving money to cancer is a big deal, and I'm a big supporter of that. Especially my father, he passed away from cancer.
Yeah.
And it is like such a leading cause of death in all of the people that we love in life. But the brain is like one of those things. We all have it. If we don't get killed by cancer or some sort of heart related disease, we're definitely going to either go crazy. We're going to lose our memory.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like, this is how we are intelligent beings.
Yeah. You know, 10 years ago, my dad got in a really traumatic car accident where another car came through the windshield and hit him in the head. And he's never been able to recover since. So I understand the challenges of the brain and what it does to someone if it's not fully functioning. So I'm going to make a $1,000 donation right after this.
Amazing.
And,
thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Appreciate that.
Of course. And
that's really cool.
We'll spread it out to everyone as well and make sure we support. We'll have all your social media linked up and everything. Anything else you want to let us know to link it, we'll share it out to people.
Even on that note, you know, there's more information on where the money's going to going towards and all the organizations that we work with. And they're great organizations. I met with already, like most of them, like Lou Ruvo Center for one, the Brain Health Center in Nevada. They're the leading brain organization center around the world.
Awesome.
And, I'm really happy we're working with them.
That's cool.
And that's actually a privately held organization center that because it's privately held or privately funded, there's so much more activity and research and just great stuff happening there.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I just love working with people that are really pushing the envelope, you know?
That's cool. Well, we'll make sure to support all we can. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Steve, for your incredible contribution to the world.
Thank you.
It's amazing to see what you've created, the passion you have, and the way you bring everyone together, not only your audience and everyone that comes to your gigs, but the community inside the music industry. You're bringing a collection of so many different types of people together to work and collaborate on things. And for me, when I think about you, I think of family. I think of everything you create as a sense of bringing family and community together. So I want to acknowledge you for your incredible gift, your dedication, your commitment to pushing the envelope, even if it's scary for you and even if it may not be relevant. Because I think that's the true sense of a leader.
Thank you.
So I want to acknowledge you for all that.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Thank you.
And the final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
I guess, I don't know. I think you have to, whatever you do, you have to push yourself. Mm. That maybe there is like, you know, maybe there is no plateau. I mean, I guess that's the thing. There is no plateau. Like you have to just strive to do better than what you did before. And it's just a constant it's a constant like workout. You know, it's a constant workout of all the different things that you're striving to do that's better for people around you, for everyone you touch, whether it's just your family, whether it's just your friends or a bigger community. Yeah. And you know, I think that like that in itself is once again, on that note, it's definitely more about, what they say, it's the journey, not the destination. Mm-hmm. It's definitely more on that lane.
Sure.
'Cause as you strive and you learn, that is an adventure in itself.
Yeah. Steve, thanks for coming on.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It, there you have it. Greatness Nation. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. Again, make sure to share it out with your friends. LewisHowes.com/401. We've got some different video highlight reels from this episode that we posted on Facebook and Instagram. We've got the full video over on YouTube. So make sure to go to YouTube/LewisHowes and everything, all the photos, all the videos, all the show notes, how you can get connected to Steve, his charity, and support him is at lewishowes.com/401. So make sure to check out the link right there. See all the behind the scenes. Leave a comment on the YouTube channel or the blog or on social media letting me know what you think. And make sure to tag Steve as well to let him know about the support from this podcast. I love you guys. You know, the thing is, I bring on some of these incredible human beings who have made it to the top and are still striving to achieve more great things. But Steve didn't start off at the top. He didn't start off as one of the biggest DJs in the world. He started out with 15, 20 people in his living room, you know, hoping to get a few people to show up to listen to his music. He started off doing it day after day, working hard for a decade and then some. And he's just getting started. But sometimes we get overwhelmed and we think, I'm not where I want to be. You know what? But what I learned about Steve is it's all about the process and the journey. And he's happy to perform for 10 people or 10,000 people as long as he gets to do what he loves. So make sure you are focusing on doing the thing that lights you up, that gives you passion, that gives you energy, and that impacts other people. Whether it's one or 1 million, enjoy the journey of each human being that connects and resonates to your message and your craft and your art. Continue on the journey to your destination. Thank you guys again. LewisHowes.com/401. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
With chocolate treats mixed into dark chocolate ice cream, the Tillamook Chocolate Collection is a chocolate game changer. Because the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection Ice Cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.